Welcome to Life List, a birding podcast.
Hello, hello, welcome, welcome, everybody. We are still here in Cali at the Columbia Bird Fair. My name is George Armistead. I am here with my co-host, Molly Brown, with the Birder Show, Chris Bell, and also with acclaimed author, Jennifer Ackerman. Welcome to the show, Jennifer. Great to be here with you.
Thank you. It is a delight to be with you.
Yeah, really awesome. Looking forward. We've been looking forward to this for a while. We talked about this a little bit before we started recording. We named at our first podcast of the year, we named our most wanted birders of the year.
That's right.
And Molly named you as her most wanted.
So. I am so honored, Molly. Yeah, Thank you.
It's so wonderful to be here.
Why did
with
I come
you
on the list?
Yeah. We'll get to that. No worries. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I was, I won that race of meeting new birders.
Yeah. Yeah, you did.
It happened pretty quickly.
I named three and I've gotten zero so far, but.
Are you going to let us know who they are?
All in due course. Yeah, I said Karina Newsom, Corey Usick, and Andy Farnsworth. Those are my three.
Good.
So, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
listening.
Yeah. Well, and to be fair, you wouldn't be a life birder for me. So
that's true.
Yeah.
We've birded together a few times.
Quite a bit. Yeah. So yeah.
Well, you guys, this is great for me as well because you guys were two of the first guests that we had on the Birder Show when we first started out.
Yeah.
You were number one with Rich Page, and we had that sort of guides episode. And Jennifer, I think you were probably episode two or three. I think something like that. And yeah, we had a great chat. That was still one of our most commented and liked episodes.
Well, it was so much fun for me, really, and everybody has told me that it is by far the best interview they've seen me do. And it's really thanks to your craftiness in just shaping a wonderful bird show. And, you know, just the collegiality of the whole bird delight. And, yeah.
It was a lot of fun. Well, I'm sure we'll have a great time today as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So is this your first time in Columbia?
Second time in Columbia. I was here in 2020, just before the pandemic, for the Hay Festival in Cartagena and Medellin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, but I had very little time to bird.
Yeah.
And so this is just such a welcome return.
Yeah.
I got a tantalizing taste of a little bit of bird exposure that first visit, and you know, what is it, 2,000 species or something?
It's ridiculous. It's absurd.
Coming up from 2,000.
That's awesome. And I understand you had a little bit of field time today. You've been running around a lot of this festival. They've got you very busy, and we're thankful for your time now. But I know you got a little bit of field time in today.
Yeah? I did. I got to go to Chicarral, and we had a really fabulous day. We saw a pair of toucan barbettes and a pair of scaled fruit eaters. And they were right up close, right by the road. And we got terrific photographs of them. And they were completely silent. And as if they were just sort of like, here we are, you know, just putting on a show for us. And then, you know, really probably 30 species of hummingbirds and tanagers. And it was just absolutely marvelous. And then on my way here, I had the great delight, total surprise. The bus stopped and we got out in an apartment building and we went to the back. And one of the bird fair people that work here had discovered a spectacled owl above her garage.
Oh my gosh.
Back. And she'd heard it calling. And so she went out and looked around. And there it was, just sitting in the tree, getting harassed by a Jacobin hummingbird, but you know, pretty imperturbable and just, you know, looking down at us the way that owls do.
Yes, so, exactly.
Yeah. It was great.
That's awesome. Yeah, and the genus for that bird is Pulsatrix, for that pulsating call they have. That's such a great sound, one of the great bird sounds.
Truly.
Yeah. Well, that's very cool. Yeah. Have you gotten to eat some Colombian food while you're here a little bit?
Yeah, we had a traditional lunch at the La Minga Eco Lodge, rice and beans and avocado salsa, and just delicious, wonderful juice. And the food here has been uniformly wonderful. I am a huge fan of arepas,
yes.
And Yeah, just about. I think I'm a huge fan of everything Colombian.
I know. It's a lot to like.
I know how that feels.
Yeah. I've been living that for 10 years. Yeah. I was supposed to leave 9 years ago, and yet here I still am.
Yep. Yeah. I think we all have found, Colombia's found a place in our hearts, for sure, and for good
Absolutely.
Reason. Absolutely. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Well, we're all looking forward to your talk tomorrow night. That's going to be a great time. I know our group that we brought from the States are all looking forward to it as well. In fact, we're having our farewell dinner tonight because everyone was like, well, we can't do the farewell dinner in the middle of Jennifer's talk. So,
I'm relieved.
Yeah, exactly.
That's very nice.
Yeah, so now we're doing it tonight and so that everybody can go to the talk tomorrow, and that's going to be awesome. And Molly and I were just talking about, you have a new book on the horizon. Maybe you want to tease that a little bit and let folks know what's coming with that?
I would be delighted to. It's called What an Owl Knows, The New Science of the World's Most Enigmatic Birds. And it's just about that. It's about what we've discovered really in the past decade about the science of owls. And, you know, they're such a difficult group of birds to study because they're crepuscular or nocturnal, and they're very secretive, but there's such a huge fascination with them, and has been, you know, for tens of thousands of years, really, all the way back to the Chauvet Caves 30,000 years ago, and that was the you know, some of the first paintings of owls were was a beautiful sketch, they think, of a Eurasian eagle owl deep in the cave. And so, you know, I think owls are in our DNA in some way. You know, we came to be a species alongside them. And so I think people are really fascinated, and they're fascinated by their mystery. But it's really been in the last 10 years that we've learned so much about these birds, partly because of new technology, tracking technology, and new ways of observing owls. And the book is really focused on the pretty exciting new discoveries. Mm-hmm. Recently.
Nice.
Yeah.
So did you start reading about these discoveries and decide that you wanted to turn that into a book, or did you start pursuing them because you were interested in writing about owls?
Both, I would say. Yeah. You know, I make a habit of perusing scientific journals of all kinds, particularly ornithological journals, and so I am looking for things that, you know, oh my gosh, there are a lot of articles about bird intelligence or, you know, different interesting forms of bird behavior, and there's been really great research on owls recently. So some of it came out of, like, just seeing a pattern emerge of really wonderful and enlightening new studies. And then also, I like everybody else, I think, I'm just really interested in owls. And I had the great good fortune of having an owl, screech owl, eastern screech owl, roost in an owl box right behind my house. So the kitchen window looked right out on this owl box, and this eastern screech owl roosted there for 2 years. And we would my kids were little, I had two little girls, and we would just watch the owl, you know, either just roosting or, you know, we never saw it leave. But sometimes in the morning we'd come down and there would be the wing of a mourning dove, like, hanging out of the box. And then we'd see it sort of twitch, and then it would be yanked into the box. Wow. And then the girls were just aghast, you know, what is going on? Yeah, and when I took the box down, it was packed with, you know, fur and feathers and things. But so that was one of my first really, you know, just exposures to what incredibly skilled hunters they are, and so secretive. And so I have just enjoyed learning about everything from how they communicate, which is also a brand new field. I mean, they're using artificial intelligence to understand how owls communicate, and the kind of subtlety of their messages that, you know, hoot is not a hoot is not a hoot. There's a lot going on in their communication. And, you know, we've learned so much about flight and really all kinds of things, the psychology of owls. So the book really explores all of these new areas, and it was just great fun to work on. And I had the really good fortune to work with some terrific scientists on this book. I think, you know, most ornithologists are very, very dedicated, but these owl people,
they're it's a whole different breed,
over the
yeah.
top.
Yeah.
Definitely devoted.
Yeah.
So, great people.
It is interesting, as you were saying, the sort of the space that owls occupy in you know, in various human societies, and it's just, I don't know if it's the binocular vision or, you know, or the mysteriousness of them being mostly nocturnal or crepuscular, as you're saying. But yeah, like, they are fascinating and they're impossible to turn away from. And I used to always say, we would do pelagic trips, and sometimes you have people on pelagic trips who say, you know, like, we're not interested in the whales, you know, like, we're here for seabirds, that's it. And you're like, really? There's a humpback whale or a sperm whale, like, breaching right here, and you're going to be like, I don't want to look at that? And I used to say that anybody that turns their nose up at a whale or an owl is simply a bad human being. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah. It's a good rule to live by.
Yeah. I think so. I'm on board with that one.
Yeah, I think it's a fair measure.
Yeah,
well, that's interesting. You know, it makes sense that it would be a topic you would choose given your fascinations on other subjects you've written on. We were talking about how we like to write as well, you know, not necessarily with much skill, but but with passion. Was curious, like, do you bird to write at times? Do you find yourself, or what's your process like when it comes to writing?
What's your write bird balance, like a work-life balance?
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
It is. I mean, I feel so lucky because, you know, my work is going out in the field, traipsing around behind scientists who are studying the species that I'm interested in. And that is the juice of my work, and it's what I love doing. So, yes, there's some work, bird-life balance, bird-work balance, I guess, I get out every day. Sometimes twice a day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I usually have my binoculars with me, and so I do a lot of casual birding, but really the great moments for me that provides so much energy for my writing is, you know, being out in the field with the people who love these birds and have devoted their lives to them, and are so eager to share what they've learned. So it's just always an extraordinary experience. So it really begins with my kind of casting around looking for, okay, what's happening in the field of owl research, and you know, where do I want to put the focus, and who's doing the great work, and then getting in touch with those people and getting out in the field with them. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, taking notes. And that's my favorite part of the process. Mm-hmm. For sure. The writing, it's hard. I mean, yeah. It's just, it's laborious, and sometimes it feels like a slog, you mm-hmm. know. I love the editing process because that's when I get to play with language, and but just getting the material down on the page and making it into a story and a narrative, sometimes that's really, it's just really challenging.
Yeah.
But I do enjoy that process too. It's just sometimes it just feels, a little overwhelming to you know, squeeze this material into something so that people can really chew on and enjoy, and, you know, not to go, not to talk down to an audience, but
sure.
But also not to, you know, overwhelm them with technical information. So,
right.
So the material's really accessible.
Yeah,
I
think that's the trickiest part sometimes, is taking, you know, and I think we do this in guiding to some degree too. When you're out in the field, you're trying to, like, take some science that's, you know, some sciencey stuff that's real dense and thick, and you know, condense it into something that's sort of, you know, digestible.
Exactly. And what I describe the process of, like, you know, I read a lot of scientific articles, and I'm always looking for the nuggets in them, you know.
Yes, the juicy bits.
The juicy bits, yeah. And they're there, you know. They're just, it's just an amazing material, but usually it's presented in a very dry way, so you kind of have to cherry pick it.
Mm-hmm.
And and then presented in a, you know, in a narrative framework engages people.
That's where there's real artistry.
I hadn't thought about the amount of collaboration that you would put in with different researchers to actually produce the book, but then you get stories from it too, so it's not just the data, and it's the story behind it and your story learning it and experiencing it, and that's a really cool aspect of what you put into the books.
Well, thank you. Yeah, that's it is, it is a personal journey of discovery. But I like to try to, you know, bring the reader along with me. And, you know, usually I start out not knowing very much, and that's probably a good thing, you know, and I like to ask very basic questions when I start out. And sometimes the best material comes that way. And it's just, being out in the field and learning myself and then, trying to put it all together.
Weave it together.
A question I wanted to ask as well was, well, we talked about this a little bit when you were on the show, and I thought it was kind of relevant for where we are now, because one of the families of birds that a lot of birders here will be really familiar with are ant birds, right? It's like down in the Pacific jungle region, San Cipriano, that's the big target, finding an ant swarm. And my favorite chapter in your books, all of your books, is the one about ant following birds in the bird world, right? And I've never looked at an oscillated ant bird the same way since, realizing that, you know, this seemingly sort of just instinctive behavior of following ant swarms is, you know, planning for the future, you talk about in these books, that, you know, they go around and they check the ant bivouacs with no purpose of eating just before roosting and then arrive at the same spot the next morning.
I mean, they're scouting.
They're scouting. They're planning for the future. It's incredible.
Yes, and they remember the locations of those ant colonies, and then they share information with other ant birds. I mean, I think that's extraordinary. That's one of the topics I'll talk about tomorrow night is that information sharing. So, yeah, their ant birds are truly extraordinary. Oscillated ant bird is a hero of mine.
I remember the last one I saw in San Cipriano in this region, the Pacific coast, was, I mean, I don't know for sure, but I assume was doing basically that exact thing, because I saw it at about 6:15, it was getting dark, and this bird wasn't following the ants or anything, it just flew into a branch, looked around a bit, and then carried on its way. I was just thinking, planning for the future.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah,
looking for the bird.
Amazing.
Incredible.
There are so many birds to see in Colombia. And it's so tempting to try to rush through and see as many as you can. But then these are the kinds of experiences that if you go slow and you take your time and you can just see these different behaviors and so much reason to keep coming back.
And that is, you know, it is, it's a really pull. It's a pull between, you know, seeing lots of different species and observe, you know, slowing down and observing the behavior. And, you know, I lean toward the behavior observation rather than, you know, sort of just moving on to the next species to tick it off my list. But it's, there's, you know, it's definitely, you only have so much time out birding, and, you know, you have to decide where you're going to put your energy. So
absolutely. And not that you have to come to Colombia to see that. Of course, you can see that anywhere in the world.
But you should come to Colombia.
I'll second that.
We've talked about that a lot on the podcast, though, how, like, the intensity of birding, if you say you're birding intensely, people, I think, typically think you're, like, rushing to see as many species, but there are lots of ways to really intensely observe birds and get a lot out of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, whether you're watching behavior or whether you're, whatever you're studying in birds, you can do it intensely. I would say you can be, you know, active or passive about it, and I think there's benefits to both ways, you know?
Yeah. And it always amazes me the amount of time that the researchers spend in the field at one site watching one bird. Hours and hours and hours. It's such difficult work, really. I mean, and some of it is very boring, but what they turn up is astounding. So, you know, it takes patience. But, and, you know, I aspire not to be a researcher, but I'd like to have that kind of patience in observing bird behavior. Because you, as you point out, you don't have to come to Colombia or go to Australia to see interesting behavior. It's happening all around us.
You could do it on a park bench, potentially, you know, in the inner city even.
That was a really interesting phenomenon in the pandemic when everyone was confined to their backyards. And I found so many nest sites around my house that year. And I've just never observed birds in such a confined area like that before. And, of course, had lots of non-birder friends who were seeing like scarlet tanager fall out and that kind of thing. Just so many more people taking the time to notice birds. It's really cool. I mean, so much enjoyment from that. Even if you're not taking it from an academic perspective, just the pleasure of...
Pure enjoyment.
Yeah.
Pure enjoyment.
Of getting to slow down and enjoy birds.
Yeah, it really was a, you know, a silver lining, if you want to call it that, of the pandemic, because I think people did turn to nature. You know, they needed it. And that has persisted. I think that the bird watchers that were born during the pandemic are now lifelong lovers of birds. You know, they really have a new appreciation. So anything good came out of the pandemic, I think that was certainly one thing.
Yeah, I thought it was fascinating that during that time, they went to, if they could, depending on where they were, and, you know, Colombia is a little different than in the U.S., but they would go to parks. They communed with trees, and the animal shelters were emptied. Nobody could get a pet anymore.
Right.
You know, it was like we turned to animals and trees, you know, was basically what we did. In times of deep need, that's where we went. And I think that says a lot about us and how much we need animals and nature.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
I could do without these, what do you call them, no-see-ums?
The no-see-ums,
yes. I should point out for everyone listening that currently getting savage. A short-sleeve tropical shirt may have not been the smartest outfit choice for dusk in Cali.
I love it. The guy who's gone native here in Colombia doesn't know how to dress for for the zoo in Cali.
Well, I mean, I know how to dress to look great.
Yeah. Well, no question about
just
that.
Just not to get
savage. But like the shirt, it's just not practical.
And I think we should point out Jennifer's shirt is pretty
top
on
shirt.
Target as well. A variety of owls on display, not just one, but a variety.
Yes, it's true, and it was a gift from a friend. I have to admit that my house is filling up with owl objects, and at some point it's going to be embarrassing.
Yeah.
So I'll have to put an end to it. Your book hasn't
even released yet. I know.
I was talking about this with someone the other day. Do you find that since you kind of publicly, as it were, came out as a birder, that one of the good things about it is that every Christmas and birthday present from everyone who knows you from then on will be bird themed?
Oh my God.
Absolutely.
One of the great side elements of being a birder.
You know those bird clocks that were like the year those came out, I think I got like four of them. And I was like, really? And like, and you know, after like a couple days, you know, when the clock hand gets to the kingfisher, it's like the flicker sound goes off and it's like, and it just, it's all akimbo. It is. It's like, sometimes it's like, I feel like you'd be, you know, it's like people would give a hockey puck to Wayne Gretzky or something for Christmas. You're like, you know, not that, you know.
The Wayne Gretzky of birding.
Yeah, not that I'm the Wayne Gretzky of birding, but it's like, you know, you're so into something and it's like, maybe tickets to an ice hockey game would be better than, another bird book. But,
That's a good idea. Yeah, suggest plane tickets instead
there you
of
go.
Bluebird coasters. And
right. Yeah. Well, I felt like I should confess too, and one question I wanted to ask you guys that I'll tease a little bit before I ask it was and I'll tell mine first, was the incarnation, if you have a reincarnation bird. And I don't remember if we've talked about this before on the podcast, but as you were talking about the spectacled owl, we raised this on a podcast once on one of our previous episodes where Alvaro mentioned that his bird name, he has a couple, but one of them is the fire-eyed Dukan, this, you know, crazy flycatcher from the southern cone of South America, because he doesn't wear sunglasses when he goes birding and his eyes are always totally bloodshot. At least that was the reason he told us they were bloodshot. We were never really fully convinced. But, you know, I'm not casting aspersions about our co-host here, but, you know, he's not here to defend himself, so, you know, I'll cast away. But yeah, so that was his bird name, and he was saying, you know, at some point you should talk about yours, George. And so mine is the spectacled owl.
Mm.
So I really took that on, and it became sort of part of my thing. It's sort of a totem, you know, for me. And so I have a lot of owl stuff around the house. We got a lot of owl stuff, and I actually, my first house that I bought, I called the Owl Ranch. That was the eBird hotspot that I named it. I called it the Owl Ranch. And then I learned not too long after that, I'm forgetting. Who's the guy that wrote Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas?
Hunter S. Thompson.
Hunter S. Thompson. That was what Hunter S. Thompson called his house. And I was like, yeah. Oh, no. That's like, how have I converged on the same
home name? The Wayne Gretzky of birding with Hunter S. Thompson of birding.
Oh, yeah. So and we moved into it. Once I got married and moved into a new house, I now call it the Chateau de Chouette. Which is the Chateau of the Owl. For a while, we considered the Parliament building, you know, like a Parliament of Owls, but it seemed too far, nobody understood what the heck that was about.
But the Chateau Chouette, everyone gets that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no problem. Yeah.
So wonderful.
Yeah. I don't know what my one would be. I mean, the one I get called in the office at work is Bearded Bellbird for obvious reasons.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's pretty obvious. So, yeah, it makes sense, yeah.
So that's your totem, but do you have...
It's not mine. It's okay, just like a nickname thing.
Gotcha. But do you have a reincarnation bird? Like, if you could come back as one of our crazy feathered friends, have you ever thought about what that would be?
I think it... Some sort of falcon. Mm-hmm. I think. And I think orange-breasted falcon, which is my favorite falcon. Yeah. And one of my favorite birds.
Yeah.
I just think that just that combination of that eyesight. Maybe it's a little bit because I am terribly blind in both eyes. I've worn contact lenses since I was like 7. So anything that has incredible sight, I'm slightly envious of, I think. So maybe it's something to do with that subconsciously. I'm like, anything that has kind of that incredible vision appeals to me.
Well,
orange-breasted falcon.
That's a fantastic one. Yeah. I've only seen them once. It was at the Cerros de Mapocouvre in Colombia here, which is a marvelous place if you guys ever get to go. But mine is also a falcon, Chris.
Okay.
And it's the merlin.
Oh, yeah, good bird.
Because they can kind of go anywhere. Like nobody can really mess with them too much, mm-hmm. and they're kind of like a little bit of jerks a little bit. You know, they're kind of like but nobody
and
can
you
really
aspire
do
to this.
I like the idea of the freedom. I wouldn't actually want to be the
to
jerk.
Be a jerk.
Yeah, but they like sometimes they look like they just dart around for fun. And they're just like they have these diagonal stoops they do, and they're just whenever they appear on the scene, it's so dramatic and sudden and. And they look super alert and kind of a little pissed off at the same time and agitated. You know, I like that about them. You know, maybe it's the city guy in me. It's, the Philly. It's got a little Philly in it, the Merlin.
There we go. So we're both Falcons.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
I think my daughters nailed it for me. So I was telling them about Kia. And they, I was telling them about, you know, what incredibly playful birds they are and, you know, how they how they love to explore. And, you know, when I was, my first Kia I met in an aviary in Austria, and I was, you know, told to take off all my jewelry and my earrings, you know, my watch, because the birds were going to explore everything. And sure enough, they came running over, and you know they were poking at everything, and they pulled off my shoelaces and unraveled them. And
wow!
Anyway, I'm telling my daughters about this, and they're sort of shaking their heads, and they're saying, "Yeah, Mom, that must have felt like familiar." And because in my family we have a tradition of sort of determining our own spirit age. So what is, you know, what is the age of your spirit? And I told them, and this is true, mine is 9 years old. And so they're listening to the description of the Kia, and they're saying, well, you know, Mom, that really sounds a lot like your inner child. And so I really identify with them. They're largely because they're so social, they're playful, and they collaborate. They work together well. So I think my strongest identification would be with the Kia. Yeah.
Nice. That's a fantastic one. Yeah.
Yeah. What about yours?
Well, I was opting more for the playful route as well. Also a highly intelligent bird that could be a little ornery, I would say.
Uh-huh.
Have the ability to, they're social, but they also spend time alone, and that's a common raven.
I always
love
good
common
choice.
Raven,
yeah.
Which is my tattoo here on my wrist.
One of my favorite birds.
Really? Yeah.
Me too. Oh.
Love
me too.
I love them. They've expanded a lot across Appalachia and a lot of the U.S. So I see them every day now, and it's very nice.
Yeah.
It never gets old.
That's a great, great choice.
And one of the smartest for sure.
Yeah,
right? They do.
Definitely.
They do a lot of play. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Great problem solvers. Yeah.
on Christmas Day this year, and it was, 0 degrees in eastern U.S. It was really cold, and we were venturing out to go over to my boyfriend's parents for dinner, and there's one bird out, and it's a raven, like, doing somersaults way up high, just having the time of its life, not at all caring that it's absolutely miserable out.
Yeah. I love the some of the video imagery they've caught of ravens playing catch with snowballs, I mean, little snowballs, you know, they just throwing them around. There's no apparent purpose to this behavior. It is just playful. Yeah, that's really great.
You do have to admire them. My father and I always liked looking at, when Audubon used to publish their Christmas bird count report, we would always look at the Prudhoe Bay Christmas, Prudhoe Bay, Alaska Christmas bird count to see if that year they saw the raven. Because it was either they would see like a raven, two ravens, or zero birds. That was like, that's it.
You know? There's it's nothing
like,
else.
Yeah,
up
exactly.
There.
Yeah. And it's like, it shows you how resourceful and smart that bird must be to overwinter someplace like that.
Yeah, God, I can't imagine.
Pretty intense. Yeah, well, guys, I think we're probably running up on our time here. I know Jennifer's got to scoot because she's got to do mic checks, sound checks, and all that stuff. But thank you so much for taking the time. Really appreciate it.
It was a joy. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Absolutely.
That was great.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back again soon.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.